another edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. I'm Ian Mendes, joined by Haley Salvey. And today, ahead on this episode, we'll be joined by the patriarch of the Tkachuk family, Keith Tkachuk, as we get set for five games of the Tkachuk Bowl, Matthew versus Brady, head-to-head. We'll talk about the outdoor games in Lake Tahoe on the weekend, and we'll ask the question, spectacular or spectacular fail? Sidney Crosby hits a milestone, and we'll also do multiple choice madness. But Haley, as we get to the start of our podcast here on this Monday, we were hit with some significant and breaking news in the National Hockey League. I think a lot of us, Haley, were kind of collectively picking our jaw up off the floor reading earlier this morning. Larry Brooks, I believe, from the New York Post, the first reported that Rangers superstar Artemi Panarin taking a leave of absence from the Rangers in the aftermath of what his team is calling a political hit piece from Russia, alleging that about a decade ago, Artemi Panarin assaulted an 18-year-old girl in Russia. So obviously, this has political angles. This has, criminal angles. The Rangers have released a statement that we can read in a bit. But what was your initial reaction, Haley, to seeing a story of this magnitude drop on Monday morning?
Yeah, my first reaction was, we don't want to take away from what could be a legitimate, alleged assault. Like, I don't want to take anything away, if something did happen 10 years ago with this 18-year-old. We don't want to take away from that. But I think seeing this come out automatically, and Larry Brooks alluded to it in his tweet too, but automatically you think about Artemi Panarin's Instagram post, the politically charged Free Navalny. He has been outspoken in the past about Vladimir Putin. So right when you see something like that with a really high-profile Russian player who's been vocally against the leader of that country, right away you just start to think like, ooh, what's happening here? Like, you just automatically, you don't want to have the hot takes because, again, there is an allegation here of assault against a young female from 10 years ago. There is politically charged nature of this. And you don't want to have those hot takes online in something like this. But right away, you see this morning and you're like, ooh, there's something more happening here. Like, this isn't just a story coming out of Russia. Like, it just didn't feel normal, if that makes any sense. I still don't really know how to take this because it only just came out not too long ago.
Yeah, and I'll read the statement from the Rangers that they put out this morning, which basically reads as follows. Artemi vehemently and unequivocally denies any and all allegations in this fabricated story. This is clearly an intimidation tactic being used against him for being outspoken on recent political events. Artemi is obviously shaken and concerned and will take some time away from the team. The Rangers fully support Artemi and will work with him to identify the source of these unfounded allegations. So what I think is interesting just from that, Haley, it's not a tepid response from a team. Look, they are unequivocally backing the player. And oftentimes in stories like these, the first thing an organization does is, hey, we're going to do our own internal investigation. Until this time, we're asking the player to be removed. I'm not getting that vibe. I'm getting the vibe that the Rangers are fully supporting Artemi Panarin and are on board with the idea that this is some sort of smear campaign against their superstar.
Yeah, and I'm getting the feeling, too, that there is genuine concern for Artemi Panarin and his family's well-being. I think that's been the big word that I've zeroed in on from Larry Brooks, from this statement. Like, there's concern here, and that's scary. Like, this is bigger than just a player leaving the Rangers. Like, I'm not going to get into what this means for the Rangers' top six and what this means for their results. Because obviously, I'm sure there's some fans who are genuinely like, oh, we can't catch a break here. But at the end of the day, like, I'm seeing genuine concern for the well-being of a player and his family. And that's pretty scary.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen this because I think for the most part, Haley, NHL hockey players they're not typically politically outspoken athletes, right? They don't often use their platform. Panarin has certainly been doing that in the last few months. I think of the story of NBA center Enes Kanter, Haley, who for years was outspoken against the Turkish government. And I remember when the Knicks were supposed to go back and play a game in London, England, like he wouldn't even go because he felt like the minute he left the United States borders, he wasn't protected. He felt like there were operatives all over the world that were ready to do something. And so I think that's the sort of fear that Artemi Panarin is now living under, that you know, because he's been outspoken, this could have ramifications. And I think we also need to take a moment to understand how fortunate we are, no matter what side of the political spectrum you might fall on, that in North America, if you're Steph Curry, if you're LeBron James, if you're, you know, pick an athlete, pick somebody who has been outspoken about their government, there has never been the feeling that there would be some sort of repercussion back to you that would maybe endanger your life or your family's life. So I think this is eye-opening for people like us, Haley, who live in North America and just take for granted. If I want to run Justin Trudeau, I'll run Justin Trudeau. If I want to run Joe Biden or Donald Trump, whoever, you can do that without the fear of your life being in danger.
Yeah, and even just going right back to Larry Brooks, he did tweet, you know, that retribution was feared after Panarin's Instagram post last month in support of opposition leader Alexei Navalny, with the caption "Freedom for Navalny." And Panarin, who has family in Russia, has been outspoken in the past against Putin. So just the fact that people who know the situation, right when they saw Panarin was taking a leave, they could connect it back to that post. It's, you know, like you said, it's scary. And with Cantor, I mean, he was even more frank with the media. Like, he told local media, like, "I'm afraid I will get killed if I go on this trip." Because there was an arrest warrant and like an extradition for him because he was very, very vocally against the Turkish president. And he was, I think, looking for help from former U.S. President Donald Trump. And he was terrified. And he said, "I'm scared for my life. I'll get killed if I go over there." And like you said, Ian, that's if one of the players in North America said something, and they have, like if players say something about the prime minister or questioning the political, you know, some of the policies, they're not going to be scared for their life. And I just think that's, like you said, it's a really important consideration that we should make because we're very lucky that we don't have to be fearful of our lives if we voice concern of the country's leader.
And again, this is obviously one of those stories that will have many elements. And I'm sure as the day evolves and as the week evolves, this is going to sort of be a fluid situation. But that is, I think, at this stage of the game here, Haley, midday on Monday, the most significant story of the NHL. We certainly didn't wake up this morning thinking that this was going to be the story. Haley, I think a lot of us thought, okay, let's sink our teeth into what happened in Lake Tahoe, the National Hockey League playing back-to-back games. And let's be honest here. What happened on Saturday was a little bit embarrassing for the league when you have to have an 8 or 9 hour intermission because the sun ruined things between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche. The league had a little bit of egg on its face. So I'm going to ask you the question here, okay? Should the NHL be embarrassed about the way things played out this weekend in Lake Tahoe and in particular on Saturday in that Vegas Golden Knights Avalanche game?
Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, when we saw the views, like there was so many people tweeting the at that account, like old takes exposed. And when the puck dropped, it's like, oh, how beautiful, how amazing, perfect day in Lake Tahoe. And then 45 minutes later, the whole game has been paused for 9 hours. And everyone's like, ooh, maybe shouldn't have been pumping this up so much. But I think the views were amazing. It looked incredible. There was maybe a little bit of foreshadowing because even Nathan MacKinnon said in the morning, like, "I wish it wasn't this nice out. The weather is too good." And unfortunately, like, I'm going to give the league the benefit of the doubt. And I do believe Commissioner Gary Bettman did say, like, they had people who were talking about if they could do this with the weather and with the locations. Obviously, they vetted that you could have a hockey game at Lake Tahoe. And it sounds so silly, but yeah, the sun was their enemy. Like, it sounds so doom and gloom, like the sun is our enemy.
It sounds like something like a villain would say, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not even going to do a voice because that would just, I'm not going
to do it. What voice are you going to do? Like Dr. Evil? What voice have we got here?
I don't even know. Like Megamind, something weird from Despicable Me. Like,
yes.
Everyone can just imagine it themselves. But saying like the sun is our enemy, it's just, it was such a funny clickbait quote from the commissioner. But, you know, I do think it is, I think the views were amazing. The hockey ended up being good. The game got finished, but none of that should take away from the fact that that was a failure. But other than finding like colder place, like what else is the league going to do? Like I personally don't want to trash the league for trying something different in a year like this. And obviously our colleague, Sean Shapiro, I always mess up his last name because I always say it like the Blue Jays, Shapiro.
Like Mark Shapiro, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like,
I thought it was Mark Shapiro.
It is Shapiro, yeah. Thank you. Sorry, Sean. But he did a story like, follow the money, and you'll understand why the NHL was doing something like this. So I'm not going to trash the league for trying to do something different to bring in some revenue in a really weird year. And again, I thought the views were amazing. But yes, at the end of the day, this was – I'm not going to call it like a huge embarrassment, but I'm not going to call it a huge success either because it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. It's somewhere in between. I think, you know, where I tend to fall on this one, I love the pictures. I love the way it looked. I like that the NHL tried something different, Haley. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that the league that we hammer for being too buttoned down and conservative said, what if we took a game and played it at Lake Tahoe? Okay, well, what did we learn from this? We learned that I think you can do this. But maybe it has to be a little bit later in the day and maybe the sun can't be a factor, but like maybe do it at dusk, right? Like we've learned something. So this is a good thing. This was the year, if ever there's a year in professional sports to put things into an incubator and see how it grows, this is the year. So let's not rag on the league for trying something that I think can work in the future. But now I'm going to ask you a question, Haley, okay? Because I saw it all over my timeline. Enough with the outdoor games. We're done with outdoor games. So I'm going to give you the choice, Haley. You got to get rid, but you have to keep one, but you got to get rid of one. Okay?
Okay.
Outdoor games or the All-Star game? Which goes for you? Which is gone?
Ooh. That's a tough one. Because I've never been to either. And I feel like if I would have been able to go to an All-Star game and been able to go to like a Winter Classic or something, I would have a better opinion on this. But honestly, I watch the Winter Classics and the Heritage Classics, the Coors Light, whatever. I watch that more than I watch that more with a keen eye more than I'd watch an All-Star game. And I do think the views are cool. I thought the I think it was the Heritage with the Flames and the Jets in Regina was really cool. I thought that was awesome. So I'm gonna say goodbye All-Star game because I like the winter games. Outdoor games.
Okay, but when you were a kid, growing up watching hockey, like did the All-Star game excite you? Because when I was a kid, it was super exciting for me. And then I always have this theory that like it's like your moment of maturity as a young adult is the moment you start getting cynical about the All-Star game is the minute you've hit maturity. You've hit adulthood. So did you love watching the All-Star game as a kid or no? Maybe you were cynical all the time, Haley.
I think I've just always been really cranky. For anyone who knows me, it's not a new thing with age.
Who did this to you?
I don't know. I don't know what happened, but growing up in a small town, maybe. sorry, Fergus, Ontario. You know what? I remember being more excited about like the first Winter Classics. And because for me, my dad and I, we would sit and we would binge the 24/7 HBO series that would come out. We'd always watch the game. We thought the whole documentary series leading up to it was awesome. We thought the game was awesome. I'm obviously aging myself a bit, and I do this a lot. But
no, you're aging me.
Yeah, aging
you. What
you're doing. The 2009 Winter Classic in outside with the big snowstorm. I think it was 2009. Or maybe it was the year before, but the Penguins won. I think it was against the Sabres. The blue jerseys, they look like they're in the snow globe. The game was fun. Sidney Crosby gets the game winner. I remember that more than anything that's ever happened in an All-Star game, except for maybe like Ovechkin wearing the weird hat with the – I think it was the shootout competition. Like I just think that – I just prefer the Winter Classic. Maybe I'm a little bit crazy, not just cynical, but I prefer watching the outdoor games.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. But again, I'd love to talk to like 12, 13-year-old kids right now. Do they love the All-Star game still? Like that's the part I don't quite have a handle on. But I'm with you. I think if you had to keep one, maybe it's the outdoor game. Look, you mentioned Sidney Crosby there and that iconic moment, I think 2008 or 9, where he scores that goal in Buffalo and it's like in a snow globe and it's this magical moment. Well, I thought it was funny that on the weekend where the NHL tried something different to try and replicate kind of a cool outdoor moment in an outdoor game. Sidney Crosby back in the headlines as he plays his 1,000th game. Haley, something that probably could have or should have happened a while back, but because of the injuries to Sid, he gets to 1,000 games. A really cool moment, I thought, where all the Penguins players came out wearing the 87 jerseys. I thought that was cool. But
yeah.
Here's my question to you. Okay, I'm gonna throw out a statement. You tell me if it's a crazy statement or, you know what, there's merit to it. Here's my statement. Here's my hypothesis. Sidney Crosby is the most accomplished player in Pittsburgh Penguins history. Okay? That's my hypothesis. I want to be clear. I'm not saying he's the greatest. I'm not saying he's the best. I'm saying Sidney Crosby is the most accomplished player in Penguins history. Yes or no?
Well, if we just go over his resume in 1,000 games, it's 3-time captain of a Stanley Cup, 2-time winner of the Hart, an Art Ross, 2 Conn Smythe trophies. He got the Golden Goal. That wasn't with Pittsburgh, but I mean, his resume, it feels like that's deserved for someone who's played a hell of a lot more than 1,000 games. So if you think if we're just looking at a decorated trophy case, this is tough because I don't know if you can find, like, there's even people who would think that, you know, Mario Lemieux was more talented than Wayne Gretzky, and there's the arguments of who's the best player ever. So it's difficult to say that Crosby was more accomplished, but I think just the trophy case and the amount of time he's played more games, I believe he has more cups.
Yeah. He's played more games than Mario. He's won more cups than Mario. Now, look, who am I going to take at their peak? But I'm taking 66 every day of the week. It's not even, but if you're just looking at it from who accomplished more with the Penguins, is there an argument to be made that the guy that played 1,000 games and won 3 cups is ahead of Lemieux in accomplishments? Not in terms of who's the better player, just in what he did for the franchise. I think it's worth having the conversation.
I think so. But, yeah. Like, if we're not saying, like, is Sidney Crosby going to be better in the books than Mario Lemieux? I don't know if I want to be a part of that argument.
No one's saying that. Definitely no.
But if we're talking about his resume, his trophy case, what Sidney Crosby has accomplished in 1,000 games with the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think there is definitely a fair argument to be made that he is the most accomplished player in that organization.
Yeah. And it's amazing to me that you think of the Penguins, and they have a pretty storied history when you consider they've had Mario and Jagr and, you know, Francis and Evgeny Malkin and Crosby. And Sid is the first guy to ever get to 1,000 games with that franchise.
That was surprising to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. That's what I was, I was surprised to see that nobody else had gotten to 1,000. Now, here's the next question, Haley. Does Jack Eichel get to 1,000 games with the Buffalo Sabres? I feel like the answer is going to be no. At this stage of the game.
That's a tough one too, Ian, because, I mean, I don't think so. How – something's got to give there on either side. And I just – is Jack Eichel going to get to his UFA years and say, hell yeah, like, I want to stay here? What has happened in Buffalo to make Jack Eichel want to sign?
Right. Let me ask you that. He's got his – look, he's locked up for another few years at $10 million. I think the key on Eichel is you're hearing the rumblings about trade stuff with him. It's getting louder. Here's the whole key. I think the date we need to look at, Haley, is next July. So July 2022. Mm-hmm. That's when Eichel's no trade clause kicks in. And at that point, he's going to control essentially where he gets to go. If you're the Buffalo Sabres, and you want to move Jack Eichel, I feel like you have to do it between now and then. So I guess the question I'm asking, as the Sabres continue to kind of muddle along here and struggle, what do you do if you're the Sabres? And how many teams do you think would legit line up for Jack Eichel? I feel like it should be 20 teams, but I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like it should be. I think that you just look at – I know that there's going to be that kind of that feeling maybe on the outside that Jack Eichel – you know, what has he accomplished in Buffalo? But I think that the lack of accomplishments, I don't think that's necessarily telling of the caliber of player he is. I still think Jack Eichel is an elite hockey player. He hasn't been able to get it done in Buffalo, but I don't think that can completely fall on his shoulders for so many different reasons with that team. So, but I do think, you know, that full no move clause coming into effect will definitely, you know, the Sabres don't want to end up with their hands tied. They don't want to be handcuffed. I mean, at least they shouldn't. And if you have a player who is maybe expressing that he doesn't want to, I don't know. It's a tough one, Ian, but I agree that the 2022 is the big one. In terms of him playing 1,000 games in Buffalo, because he's at under 400 right now. So he would need to play like 7 or 8 full seasons with the Sabres to hit 1,000 with the Sabres.
Yeah, I don't see it right now. Like, no. I think if you're a betting person, I kind of feel like Jack Eichel's days are numbered. And it's remarkable to me that this guy is so talented, and it just nothing seems like I thought the Sabres had a really good. I don't know what you thought. I thought the Sabres had a good offseason. I thought bringing in Taylor Hall on a 1-year deal is like, hey, this is perfect. You got Skinner in there, you got Stahl in there. Like, I thought you might have some pieces, and here we're sitting in late February, and they're continuing to struggle along. So I just don't know. But I think, like, if I'm Ottawa or I'm, like, you know, you cover Calgary or you're Nashville or you're one of these, Anaheim, whatever, L.A., like, wouldn't you be all over Jack Eichel? And I know the one that's always going to come up is the Rangers, right, because his old coach David Quinn is there. But I feel like 20 teams in the league should be all over this guy. Like, unless you have McDavid or Matthews or McKinnon, you don't have a player as good as Jack Eichel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that's fair, and I definitely agree. I just think that – I think maybe sometimes we'll get – I mean, it's not even tunnel – I just think sometimes when we're discussing the Sabres and Jack Eichel, I think that the Sabres' inability to, you know, win something or get it done and Jack Eichel, like, I just – I don't think those need to be together. I think that he hasn't done anything with this team, but I don't think that's an indictment on his skill level. And that could be a player who somewhere else could maybe get it done. And I just don't think that this what's happened in Buffalo should impact people wanting Jack Eichel on their team because he's a hell of a player.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Haley, coming up, you and I, this is going to be a lot of fun coming up. We've got Calgary and Ottawa 5 times in 6 games starting later this week. This is going to be a lot of fun, and I know it's going to be a lot of fun in the Tkachuk household as well, so we're very pleased to be joined on this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show by Keith Tkachuk. Keith, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me, guys. Everything's good here in St. Louis.
Hey, listen, first, I guess the first question, how many interview requests have you received leading into this Ottawa-Calgary matchup starting later this week?
We've had a few. I haven't done any yet, but we'll probably do some during this week. So I'm trying to stay away from a lot of interviews because Calgary is not doing very well right now. So I don't know what positive we could say about that.
I'm struggling with the exact same thing. It's good to know.
I keep fishing for things.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough. But no, we're looking forward to this week, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
How much different is it going to be just because normally we would see, you know, the big suite with the whole family, with the split in half jerseys, even just some of the games with, you know, yourself or Taryn, Chantel going to games. You know, is this the first season where you guys aren't going to be able to actually be at a game to watch Matthew or Brady?
Yeah, it's tough, obviously, what's going on with the pandemic and the rules and you know, especially going to Canada where, you know, you'd have to quarantine and they're still not letting fans in. So it's difficult, you know, you miss the boys. We always love during the course of the year to go see them at different places and have some time to watch them, especially obviously when they're playing together. We get the whole family together, especially in Ottawa, because there's a lot of, you know, relatives in the, you know, Boston area that can easily travel there as opposed to Calgary. So it's going to be a little bit different, but you know, it's still the same. You get stressed out when the boys play each other because you both want them to do well. You want them to both do well, and you know, so it's going to be a little tough. It's going to be tough, but I miss the boys and wish we could, you know, obviously get a chance to see them, but unfortunately we can't. Let's stay within the rules.
You know, Keith, I remember when you came on the radio with me in Ottawa a couple of years ago, just before the first time they played each other in the NHL, and you said the rule was no fighting. Boys, you're not allowed to fight. My question is that rule off the table now? When they play five times in six games, is that rule off the table?
No, the brothers should never fight. That's the bottom line. I don't care. It's, there's plenty of guys to fight out there. They can pick other guys on their opposing teams, so they don't need to fight each other. They're brothers or they're best friends, and you know they both can find other ways to contribute except for fighting. And Chantal wouldn't like that too much either, and I wouldn't like it. So they better not be.
I know. I spoke with Chantal in the past, and she was like, "Absolutely not, no." But
no,
it wouldn't make it. Like you said, there's more than enough people that they can go at if they want to get some energy out there. This is not going to be the first time, obviously, they played against each other. Is it starting to feel a little bit more like it's just another game, or does this still have a special value for you and your family?
You know, it's still special anytime they play each other. I mean, you know, it doesn't happen very often, you know, and especially within this division. I mean, you always, you know, it's just, you know, they're playing the National Hockey League. It's a big thrill for brothers to play against each other. Yeah, it's been a few years now, probably three. This is the third year. So it's still great to see them. The only thing I don't like is when the coaches play them on the same against each other. That's when it's frustrating as a parent, because you're in a no-win situation there. Like, you know, you'd rather see one on the ice than maybe the next shift the other one goes on. Now they have to play each other. So it's tough, but, you know, it never gets old. It really doesn't. It's more for, you know, when they hit the ice, it's business as usual, you know, but for the family, it's always great to get together and watch them, you know, compete, their teams compete against each other. And, you know, it's I don't know, it's a thrill. I know my parents really enjoy it. I know Chantal's dad really enjoys it. And we do for the most part.
It's probably a bit more tough for Matthew when the ref makes them go on the face-off against each other, because I don't think he's won a single draw against Brady.
Yeah, Brady's actually decent at face-off. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's all part of the way the referee is and positioning, and it always seems to happen in Ottawa where it favors Brady on the backhand. But, yeah, I don't think much bothers Matthew about that. So Matthew just wants to win.
Yeah.
Is best case scenario here? Look, it feels like Calgary, at least right now, is in the playoff mix. Ottawa, at this stage of the game, is not. So, you're not going to really cheer for one son over the other. But is the best case scenario here all these games at least get to overtime and there's 3 points handed out in these games, Keith?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the best case scenario. But I'm so down on Calgary right now, so I don't know. They're supposed to be playing a lot better than they're showing, including Matthew. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what are they playing, 8-9 times this year against each other? So, you know, everybody, you know, I guess we get to overtime. I guess it keeps everybody happy. So at the end of the day, whoever does well and whoever doesn't, you know, we won't be able to enjoy the person who does well, because we're going to feel bad for the one who doesn't do well. So it's a tough situation to be in, but, you know, I know Calgary is probably more favored to be in the playoffs than Ottawa is, but Ottawa's fun to watch, and I really enjoy watching Ottawa because you never know what you're going to get with them. They will work their butts off. So, but if we can get to overtime, I think we can all leave happy.
Haley and I, obviously, because we cover Canadian teams, Keith, we feel like our entire focus is on the North Division. What's it like for you? Because you have the two boys playing. Are you watching other divisions? Like, are you able to watch many St. Louis games, or are you pretty much focused on the North Division this season?
Well, I travel on weekends, so it's tough watching college hockey. But, you know, it feels like there's never a dull night. There's always one of the boys playing. So I try to rotate between Matthew and Brady, and being in a different time zone, it helps. But when they're not playing, obviously, I work for the Blues, so I want to watch the Blues. But, you know, it's interesting with the North Division, because it's such high scoring, exciting games, and then there's a lot of star-studded players in that North Division. So, you know, I feel a little bit bad for Ottawa Senators. I mean, you know, one night you're going against, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl, ridiculously unbelievable players. Mm-hmm. And then the next night you're going against Austin Matthews and Tavares down the middle and Marner. I mean, and it just never ends with Pettersson and all these guys. It's just crazy the talent that's going on. So it's exciting to watch last night, which I think surprised a lot of people. So I think the North, based on the stars that are playing, it's a fun division to watch.
That was one of the things before I left the Ottawa beat to move to Calgary. It's going to be a difficult year for the Sens because they're just always going to be punching up. And that's difficult for younger players, especially, you know, rookie teammates. But it seems like they have this really great work ethic, and Brady's having, you know, he's doing his thing. And I've been impressed with the young players like Josh Norris and Tim Stützle. They're not playing against easy teams and easy players, but, you know, they're having a pretty decent transition into the league.
You know, I know the record doesn't reflect on, you know, they've had a couple tough stretches, but they're well. You know, you can't just snap your fingers, but the players that they have, that are, I mean, the sky's the limit for that kid. And Josh stepping in and doing well. And, you know, with mixed in with a few veterans, and then the North Dakota pipeline they have ready to go up to Ottawa is going to be huge. So the pieces are there. They're going to go through some growing pains, but I think DJ has done a really good job of getting these guys focused. And I'm sure it's tough on them, but, you know, I know people maybe a little bit down on them, but they shouldn't be, because the future is bright, and I think this will pay off in the long run if they can keep everybody.
Keith, I look at the NHL stats right now. Brady is leading the league in shots on goal, and he's now second. Radko Gudas is ahead of him in hits. And I did some digging. We have never seen a player in the history of the NHL lead the league in hits and shots in the same season. I tried to ask Brady about this yesterday, and, you know, I guess he was raised really well because he went right to the team element, Keith, and said, I'm just a team guy, I'm not focused on that. But I'm asking you to be a proud dad here for a second and tell me what it's like to see your son atop the league in shots and hits at the same time.
Well, I guess, first of all, I'm proud of Brady, both of the boys. But Brady, when it comes to his play, you know, it's the hits I'm more, I guess, proud of than the shots. Shots you can shoot from anywhere, and he likes to shoot the puck, I guess. But, you know, the compete level that he has shows up in areas like that. And I know he doesn't care about stats. He just wants to go out and help his team win and provide, you know, that room for his teammates and his line mates. So, you know, he plays hard. I mean, no matter what the score is, he's going to play hard. He's going to have some tough nights. He's young, but, you know, to be able to, you know, with hits and shots, which would have been really crazy, because you see the same guys who continue to get a lot of shots on net, and guys like, you know, Wilson and Reeves, who are physical players who have a lot of hits. So Brady brings it, and, you know, it's good, but he wants to get in the playoffs.
Okay, Keith, you know, this is a question that Senators fans always ask me. And that is the way your boys, and I think Brady in particular, the mouth guard hanging out of the mouth. And, like, is Brady always been like that? Like, did he always have the mouth guard even when he was growing up, kind of hanging out of the side of his mouth? It's a unique thing. I think it's kind of like his thing. I just wanted to know where that kind of comes from.
Well, both those boys, I don't know why they do it. I guess they watch Patrick Kane when they were younger and saw him dangle that mouth guard. But it really upsets my wife, because, you know, we spent a lot of money at the dentist and orthodontist. So it'd be really sad if they didn't use that properly and got their teeth knocked out. And, you know, shame on them, I guess. But I don't know. I think it's watching Patrick Kane. I mean, all these kids grew up watching Crosby and Kane. And one of Kane's things was he was always flipping around the mouth guard.
They haven't lost any teeth yet?
I don't believe so, but they keep doing that stuff. They're going to lose it, and they're going to only have only themselves to blame. And I'm not going to have any sympathy whatsoever for them.
They're not gonna get any help from mom and dad with the dental bill if that happens.
No, I guarantee you, mom will try to help, but you know, like she always does. So, but when it comes to that, it's your own fault if they lose any chiclets.
One of the things I did want to ask you about, Keith, maybe steering a bit away from some of the games here, but I know for me personally, with no hockey on, I was watching every single one of those Stuck with the Tkachuk videos from Sportsnet. I thought they were hilarious. I thought they were really fun. What was that like for you guys to film? And obviously, it was probably nice to have everybody home for such a long period of time. But what were those videos like for you guys? How much fun was that?
Well, first, you know, there was some silver lining having all the everybody home together for the first time in a long time. So, and I think it was really good for Taryn having their big brothers around a lot more. And, you know, filming that, you know, I don't know who, somebody from Sportsnet set that up and, you know, it started up this and that. But it was actually fun to see them competing. And, you know, they did a really good job, the people setting up on the video. You know, they were competing hard. We did the golf, we did football, we did basketball, pickleball. So there was some neat stuff in there. And I don't even know, ended up knowing who won, but it was pretty close. But it was a lot of fun for the guys to do it, the boys to do it. They competed hard, and some of the stuff they didn't show, it was getting a little physical at times too in the basketball game.
Well,
didn't want anybody to get hurt.
Yeah. How many of your one-liners and chirps got cut out of the final copy?
I had to be careful when I said I was in a few, some of them I wasn't in, but a few of them I was in. I had to give it to the boys a little bit, you know, and pickleball especially. And Matthew's cheating, going over the line. You're never supposed to go in the kitchen and pickleball, but he always seemed to break that rule, and I was giving it to him. And they couldn't do Terrence field hockey stuff, you know, being lefty shooters when, you know, in field hockey you can only shoot righty. So there's some things cut out that I gave it to them for, and I forgot it was on video.
That was one of the best. That one was really impressive. I could, the differences in field hockey to ice hockey, it's really interesting to see. You know, they obviously weren't great. And Taryn's goalie was very good. That was a fun one to watch. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was fun. They did a good job. I mean, it was hard because you can only, in field hockey, you can only play righty. When Taryn first started, she would play hockey out with the boys lefty. So she had to learn really quick. She could only shoot right. So it was tough. It's hard. It's hard to handle the ball. It's hard to shoot the ball. It's harder than it looks. And I think, you know, the boys giving her grief when they'd go to watch her, because that's what big brothers do. And they figured out it was pretty tough to, you know, be able to, you know, play that sport. It's hard.
You know, Keith, I think a lot of people love to get advice from when you have three athletic, high achieving, competitive kids. Like, how did you harness that? Like, when you have three kids that are ultra competitive, like, how do you handle that as parents and not push them and not make things so crazy and chaotic within your own home?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, they got to want to do it. I mean, you can't force a kid to play a sport because the parents like it. We were lucky that our kids like to be outdoors, whether it's playing basketball or street hockey, roller hockey, or, you know, flag football or different sports. So they're active, and as long as they wanted to do it, we had the ability to do it and be with them all the time, especially when I retired. But when I was playing, Chantel did a lot of that stuff, driving them, and it's a big commitment. But, you know, when they're younger, you're not looking at, oh my god, they got to play in the NHL. That wasn't what we were looking at when they started playing hockey at a young age. It was just continue to love the sport and play it, and not only just play hockey, but play other sports. And I think when you play a well-rounded athlete, it helps you in the sport that you'd eventually play. So, and Taryn just tagged along with them and played outside with them. And, you know, as parents, we just were fortunate. Our kids love sports, and, you know, as long as they wanted to do it and worked hard at it, we were willing to, you know, spend the money and take them different places to do it.
Maybe one of the final things I'll throw at you, Keith. Ian and I were just debating about this, and we were debating between, if you could only keep one, would it be an all-star game or the outdoor games? And one of the things Ian was saying is he'd like to know, you know, what kids feel about that. And I'm interested about what players feel about that, or former players, playing in multiple all-star games yourself, and obviously having your kids and your family on the ice and in the room and stuff. What would you say between the two?
Well, I did get to play at an outdoor game, but it was an old-time hockey game, I guess you could call it. And that was unbelievable in St. Louis. That experience was incredible. Playing at, you know, Busch Stadium, and, you know, in front of that many people on that ice, and it was so much fun looking around. I just couldn't believe they can do something like that. With the All-Star game, I mean, to be able to play in that, you know, the All-Star game itself isn't great, but I think the skills competition is probably the most thing that I think people love, and it's fun and it's exciting, and guys let their hair down and have a little fun with it. And I had the ability, especially later when the kids were a little bit older, to play in one where they got to hang out in the dressing room and go on the bench and experience that stuff. So I think both things are great. I think if you can do both, that would be unbelievable. I mean, I can't pick one or the other, but they're both great.
And a final question for you here, Keith. Last week, we saw two of your former teams in that you played for in the St. Louis Blues. The Arizona Coyotes played 7 consecutive regular season games against each other. I'd like to know, if you could go back into the height of your playing days and pick one team that Keith Tkachuk wanted to face 7 straight times in the regular season, who would you pick?
Wow. Well, it certainly wouldn't be when I was Coyotes playing against the Blues, because I didn't want to play Pronger and McKenna 7 times. I didn't want to play against Dallas and play against Hatcher 7 times. Didn't want to play against the Avalanche before, play against Adam Foote 7 times in a row. That was for the playoffs. We can do that. Detroit was always those teams, man. It just was a hard team to play against. But, God, I would have to say the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know, something about the Chicago Blackhawks, the old stadium, the new rink, and the excitement there. And that's me playing for the St. Louis Blues against the rival Chicago Blackhawks. So that would be the team that I would love to play against for 7
never
games.
You can never go wrong, St. Louis.
Fans go crazy. We have a lot of people that go to Chicago, and Chicago brings in a lot of people to St. Louis. So it's a great rivalry.
Yeah, it's one of the great sports rivalries. Listen, great rivalry too with the brothers going head to head coming up. Appreciate you, Keith, taking the time, because as you mentioned, I know you're going to be just flooded with requests. So both Haley and I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to join us on the podcast today.
I appreciate it, guys. Good luck with everything. Stay healthy.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, well, Haley, that was a fantastic and fun conversation with Keith Tkachuk, and this is going to be great when the two teams that we cover meet later this week. And I know you might be involved in a little fun little charity initiative here too.
Yeah, it was a great interview from Keith. We appreciate him. It's good to know that we're very original, because he's getting flooded with requests. Yeah. Original idea from the podcast. But obviously, for those listening who maybe don't know, I covered the Ottawa Senators last season, and then I moved to Calgary this year. So covered both of the Tkachuks, and now Ian's obviously my replacement in Ottawa. We're doing this podcast together, and it's going to be fun to have that kind of Tkachuk bowl for the next week or so. So one of the really great initiatives that I've seen on Twitter, led by Bonks Mullet, he's super funny. He's a good follow if you're on Sens Twitter, hockey Twitter. He started an initiative called the Sens Money on the Board. All the proceeds go to Canada's Lifeline in honor of Brian Fraser, who has been... You know, I just can't speak highly enough about Brian's resolve and just the strength that he's shown through his battle with cancer. So for me, I want to put some money on the board for this matchup. I'm going to say for every Tkachuk goal, Brady or Matthew, I'll go 15 for each Tkachuk goal, Brady or Matthew, throughout the entire 9-game series throughout the season. So I think they've been scoring quite a bit, so hopefully they score. If they don't, then I'll do something else, but that's maybe a little bit of outside pressure on Brady and Matthew to get some goals so I can donate some money, put some money on the board for Canada's Lifeline and Brian Fraser.
There you go. Well done, Haley. Okay, well, listen, we got to wrap up our show as we always do with a little multiple choice madness, Haley, on a Monday. Multiple choice madness. Here we go. Five questions. We'll rip right through them. Number one, we opened the show, Haley, talking about outdoor games. I'm going to ask you this question. What do you think the NHL will do with outdoor games in the future, okay? What are they going to do in the future? Not what should they do, what will they do? Is it A, have them back in large stadiums when it's feasible again? B, have them in picturesque backdrops like the mountains or, you know, significant landmarks? Or C, they're going to get rid of them altogether. The league has realized it's run its course. What happens?
They'll probably go back to the large stadiums once it's feasible. I can imagine that the amount of revenue that comes in when you have a Winter Classic with a full stadium, football stadiums can fit a lot more people. I would imagine that that probably brings in more money. So again, if we're thinking follow the money, I would assume that the league is going to go for something that's going to bring in revenue. I don't think they're going to ditch it. I don't think they've run its course. So I think if there's, you know, a business outline that shows that there's some influx of cash for the Winter Classics or outdoor games, whatever it may be, they'll go back to it and they'll go back to it with fans. Unless they can see that they're going to get even more money from like ads or something, having a Battle of Alberta at Lake Louise or something. If you're going to, I just think, again, they're going to follow the money, and I just don't think that they're going to ditch it.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think it's B. I think they're going to realize what they did in Lake Tahoe can work. It's just got to be in a more controlled environment, a little later in the day. Sun's not a factor. I think you're going to see them continue to do outdoor games. There's no way they're going to get rid of them, but I think I like the idea of doing them in Central Park or Parliament Hill, Lake Louise, you know, I've seen people say, do the Grand Canyon, but I don't know about that. I don't know. That seems a little risky. Okay, on to question number two in multiple choice madness. Who has been the best surprise goalie in the NHL so far this season, Haley? Is it A, Kevin Lankinen of the Chicago Blackhawks, B, Chris Drieger of the Florida Panthers, C, James Reimer of the Carolina Hurricanes, or D, Marc-Andre Fleury? He's back. He's back as the number one goalie in Vegas. I'll go first on this one. I think I got to go Lankinen. Chicago's sitting in a playoff spot, Haley, and I didn't even know who this guy was. He's 7-3-3. His save percentage is hovering around 930. Look, Reimer's like 8-1. Fleury's got a Hall of Fame resume. I'm not overly shocked there. Drieger's a surprise. But Lankinen? If you told me Kevin Lankinen's name before the season, I wouldn't have known who this guy was. Or he sounds like he could be like an F1 driver. Kevin Lankinen won the F1 race. I don't know. But this guy, he's been great. Give me Lankinen in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Ian. Like you said, I'm not surprised that Marc-Andre Fleury's back is the number one. I think most people probably could have predicted that. It's just a nice storyline. And, you know, his save the other, I think it was last week, where it looked like he just ripped his groin in half. It's incredible. And I was in pain watching it. So I'm not shocked that Marc-Andre Fleury is back playing like Marc-Andre Fleury. But I agree with you. It's Kevin Lankinen. And if we do another segment with Dom Luszczyszyn, we'll have to talk to him about that, because he's been betting on the Chicago Blackhawks because of Kevin Lankinen. And now I think that's his favorite player. So,
yes. Let's move on to question number three. You're hearing most of the love in the MVP race is going to McDavid and Matthews, and obviously some votes for Nate MacKinnon. I'm asking you to take those three names out, Haley. No, don't add MacKinnon, McDavid, or Matthews, because they've all been talked about to death. I ask you, which other player in the league deserves a little Hart Trophy love after the first 20 games this season? Is it A, Patrick Kane in Chicago, B, Jonathan Huberdeau in Florida, C, the old guy, Nick Backstrom, still lighting it up in Washington, or D, Mark Scheifele in Winnipeg, Haley?
I think it's maybe a bit too early to do that because, I mean, we're already over a quarter of the way through the season, so I don't know how much things are going to die off, but I mean, speaking of Lankinen, he's been great, but I mean, I think that Patrick Kane's been playing pretty lights out. He has 26 points through 19 games. Again, Chicago's in a playoff spot, and we all thought that they were rebuilding. And I just think that we saw from Mark Lazarus, he wrote a piece in the offseason, I think, you know, Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, they were pissed. Like, they were like, we didn't sign up to rebuild. And look at what these guys are doing. They're in a playoff spot right now, so maybe I'm gonna go with Patrick Kane.
You know what? Give me Jonathan Huberdeau. I think he's had a great start to the year. 22 points in 16 games. I love the way this guy plays. That assist he had last week, where he kind of did the little spinorama. Like, he is one of the most underrated stars. I even think some people think Barkov is underrated. I think Huberto might be even more underrated. I think the Florida Panthers are the best story of the National Hockey League so far this season, and I think Jonathan Huberto is a driving force behind that. So I think that he deserves a little love for the Hart Trophy. Question number four in Multiple Choice Madness, Haley, which division do you think is going to have the most compelling race for first place? I'm taking the Canadian division out. Toronto's running away with that thing, so I don't feel like it's going to be overly compelling. So amongst the other three, Haley, what's it going to be? The East, the Central, or the West? I'm going to go first, and I always like maximum chaos. So give me the most number of teams involved in the race, even though I think that West division, probably from an elite team standpoint in St. Louis, Vegas, Colorado, they're all legit heavyweights. I like the fact that as we sit here today, I don't know if it's going to be Boston, Washington, Philly, Pittsburgh. Islanders are still hanging around. I just think that there's so many teams in the mix there in the East, that's going to be the most compelling one for me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of stole mine, but again, I don't want to agree with you twice. So I'm going to go with the West Division. I think that's going to be really great because you have, you know, I think that's three heavyweights. I mean, you have the Avs who were in the Stanley Cup final last year, Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, it's Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. That team's been playing great. I think Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury playing hot. You got Mark Stone. That's a great team. And the Blues, I mean, they won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago now. That's a great team too. And I think that, you know, it's not the same chaos with, you know, what, four or five teams who could realistically battle, but that's three heavyweights that can battle for the first spot. So I think the 1-2-3 in the West Division is going to be, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. And I think, you know, whoever ends up having to play those three teams, I mean, that's going to be a tough one. And it'll be interesting because it'll be the four out of the division for the playoffs. So that 2-3 fight's going to be crazy because, again, those are three teams who could realistically be number one, and you're probably going to have two of them playing against each other in the opening round of the playoffs. So
yeah, no, I'm with you. That's going to be that's almost like a little group of death there. Okay, yeah. Last question, Haley, Multiple Choice Madness. We had Keith Tkachuk on the podcast today, starting to do a little bit of the adding and looking and projecting. I want to know, Haley, look into the future and tell me when it's all said and done, which father-son combo is going to end up with more goals? Is it A, the Hulls, Bobby Hull and Brett Hull? They've got a combined 1,351 NHL goals. Okay, so about 1,350. Or is it going to be the Tkachuks? Keith is obviously in the books already with north of 500. They're at 685 as a family right now. Haley, they would need, and this happens to be the number, this isn't some sort of subliminal message, 666 goals. The Tkachuks need 666 to match the Hulls. I ask you, Haley, do they get there? Do the Tkachuks, and they got an extra kid in there, so it's a little bit of an unfair fight, but do the Tkachuks catch the Hulls, father, son, yes or no?
Subliminal messages. I don't know what you're trying to say here.
Yeah.
I mean, that would mean that Matthew and Brady would need to get to, you know, under half, like just over half of what their dad did. I think they're unicorns. I think they're great players. So they both need like over 300 goals each in their career. They're still fairly new. Brady's still in his ELC. I think that family's great. I think they could get there. It's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. They're going to need over 300 goals each throughout their career. But I think, you know what? I'm going to say yes, because I think that'd be really fun and really cool to see them catch up.
I only thing I worry about them, they play the game so hard and so rugged. Can they durability-wise get 12 years from now 600 goals between them? They have the talent. I'll say yes too. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch these two play and see if they can chase down the Hulls. I think that's a fun number. But I'll say, yeah, I think it's feasible because I think Brady, we're only scratching the surface on his offensive upside. All right, Haley, this was a lot of fun, and I guess we'll be back at it midway through the Tkachuk Bowl next week. So we'll have some fresh material here.
It's going to be, we're going to see what happens here because I'm with Keith. It's been tough flooding for the Calgary Flames right now. And I mean, if the measuring stick for this team isn't against the Leafs right now, it's going to be, can they get through a series against the very, very hardworking and better than they look Ottawa Senators? So we'll see. how my mood is next week.
Yeah. We'll get you again next week. And we'd like to thank everybody for listening to The Athletic Hockey Show. Make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave a rating and a review. We certainly appreciate that. If you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you can go ahead and get an annual subscription for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Our next edition of The Athletic Hockey Show comes your way Wednesday, two-man advantage edition of the show. Scott Burnside, Pierre LeBrun. I'll be back at it on Thursday with Sean McAdoo.